We hope you enjoy the following presentation of my work with Rudyard's Approach to Astrology by Alexander Ruperti. This is the third talk on Saturday afternoon, September 24, 1983, at the RITA Conference in Palo Alto, California. This recording is 39 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by RITA. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. And now, Alexander Ruperti.
Well, okay, we got a bit autobiographical. I'd been interested in traditional astrology for several years before 1936 in England. I went right through the literature. I went and learnt how to draw up a chart with a professional astrologer. I even passed the examination for the professional astrologers in Great Britain. And I was a member of the Astrological Lodge, which was a sort of part of the Theosophical Society in London, of whom Charles Carter was the president. Maybe you know Charles Carter because his books are circulating a bit here. And in spite of all my interest in it, I was always asking why. I've got Sagittarius on the ascendant, and I think we're always asking why with Sagittarius there. And I never found any answers to these whys. And as I was a very young man, I really didn't have any idea of how to answer that question why myself. And what happened was I was asked to take over a job on a weekly astrological paper to answer letters from readers. And I was very happy to have a job, you know. I was very proud of myself. I've got something now to work on. And then the letters started coming in. And what struck me and what nearly knocked me over was the fact that these people are writing to they don't know who, anonymous. But they put onto paper the most intimate things, the most awful problems, and they expect you to give an answer. Well, if they've got enough faith in an anonymous paper to pour their hearts out, they're going to take what I say in a very serious way. And I began to ask myself, well, am I capable of giving a valid answer to such questions through astrology or through the type of astrology that I had learnt? And I had there a sort of last quarter square experience which made me say, no, I can't do that. And so I did not take on the job. Somebody else did, evidently. They didn't have the same Saturnian aspects in their chart that I have. So that fell through. And as a result of that, I said, well, no, this type of astrology, it's not for me. And I was on the verge of dropping it completely. But I was still wondering if there wasn't somewhere a why. And one day, I was a member of the Arcane School of Alice Bailey at the time. I knew Alice very well. I asked her if she happened to know of anything. And said, well, yes, I'm publishing it at the end of this year. And that was Rudyard's Astrology of Personality. And my mother gave me that book for Christmas. And I retired into my apartments and I wasn't seen for a long while. I read that book right through the night. And there was no trouble with it. I knew all that. Rudyard just opened me up to myself. I've never had to fight over Rudyard saying, what the hell does he mean there? I knew it. And that's why I've been with it all along, because it represented something which I felt I could also represent in my little way. And that's what I've tried to do. So that's how it started. I wrote him an enthusiastic Sagittarian letter, and I even got an answer very quickly, which surprised me greatly. But at the end of the letter, I still remember it, he put, keep steady, unemotional, and unglamoured, Raja. That was my first letter from him. And so I decided to try to be steady and unemotional and unglamoured. And I went through with that, and from that I managed to get hold of old magazines. I didn't know he'd written anything before that. And I built up quite a collection of his stuff, because after the two books that Alice Bailey published, he had very great difficulty finding somebody to publish his works. And so really, the only contact he had with the public was through his magazine articles, where he was very much more practical than he is in his books. And I think you'd have perhaps an easier time applying his stuff if you knew what those articles said than in reading just the books. Don't you think so, Leila?
Yes, and I think what has happened, literally, is that many of the books have been derived from magazine articles.
Yes, they have. That's true.
For example, the Astrological Mandala was a series of articles.
Yes.
I believe it was called The Wheel of Significance.
That's right, The Wheel of Significance.
Astrological Houses also was derived from a series of articles. That is, by the way, while we're on the subject, that is one of the things that we have tossed around as an idea for Rita to do, is to, for example, the book Astrology and the Modern Psyche was not written as a book. It was several series of articles and a loose agglomeration of unrelated articles that in 1976 I edited and put together into a whole. And there are all sorts of things that can be done like that. But what is lacking and what is needed is the time, personnel, and resources to go through the material, to make decision processes, to rearrange it, to put it into a form that can be published, and then the resources.
Yes, I know. It's a problem. Well, it'll come.
By the same token, is that by the same token, in terms of the practicality of things astrologically, my experience of it has been is as I have myself understood the philosophical aspects, things like planetarization of consciousness and this book that's coming, Rhythm of Wholeness, that then it becomes apparent for one, to oneself, without having to be told how the concepts are to be applied. The practicality kind of emerges as one is able to integrate and really understand the philosophical concepts. Then nobody has to tell you how to use them. You know.
Yes, you know, but a lot of people, they're attracted, but they don't know. And they would like to have somebody who was a sort of bridge between what Rudyard says, you see. Yeah, well, that's what I say, that those articles were a bit more of a bridge, too, really, in a way. It gave certain examples, anyway. Now, I follow that, and I've seen how Rudyard's thought has evolved and become more precise through the years. But in those olden days, after having read Astrology of Personality, of course, I tried to push the thing in the Astrological Lodge. I asked Mr. Carter if he would allow me to speak on Raja in the Lodge. And it wasn't an easy thing to do, because Carter didn't appreciate Raja at all. He called him an old windbag, just words. That was his attitude, and that was the attitude of traditional astrology to anything which was deeper. It had to be something quite practical, pragmatic for the English mind, you see. And, of course, with that type of attitude, it was very difficult to put it over. I managed to talk two or three times. I even bought them Rudyard's book to have in the library in London in 1936. So they had that anyway. But there was no real response at that time at all. They didn't catch on. And even after the war, when I started in France, in Switzerland, rather. Well, I got 30 or 40 people together for a workshop, but it didn't go beyond that. They didn't catch on. It was too early still. And it's only really now, in the last 10 years or so, that we have people who really catch on straight away, and it's the ball is rolling now. But we have to wait all that time. You can't push a thing when the time isn't ripe.
And what is happening now in Europe?
Well, as I say, the young people, they're looking for that sort of thing now, whereas before nobody was looking for that sort of thing. And it just fits in, because I think the great force of Raja is that he has a human quality. It is not a philosophy, it's not something abstract. He hits you as a human being. And that's what struck me, because at the time there, I was very much up in these cosmic things, you know, the Tibetan and so forth, to such an extent that people at the time called me the walking brain, as if I had no contact with people at all. And Raja brought me down to earth. I said, that doesn't help me to be a better person in my relationships with other human beings. And it was a very important step for me. Now, I've always been grateful to Raja, having made me realize at that time that I was up there and I had to come down. And I've tried my best to be a better human being since that time and to become more human. And I think the force of Raja is that he talks always in terms of living realities. They're not abstract things that you sort of attach to a person like you did in the olden days, which are really dealing with energies and thoughts and feelings that people can respond to. And I think that's his very great help. Anyway, I haven't found anybody who does things the way he does in that way, and I've always felt that he was an important person and that we really had to help somehow. And, well, now the proof is there, but at the time, you often had a feeling, well, am I following the right way or not, you know? Because nobody else seemed to respond the same way as I did. I felt that I might be sort of running up a dead end. You often feel that way at the beginning. Anyway, the results are there now, and I have the feeling that we're not working in the dark and for nothing.
Did you during the intervening time?
Well, I wasn't practicing astrology as an astrologer for a long while. You see, I was in the medical profession. I had to earn my living. And you can't earn your living with that sort of astrology in Europe. Nobody thought of an astrologer answering that type of psychological question to start with. It was always, you know, what's going to happen the next year and all that sort of stuff, for which I was not suited at all. It's not my type of mentality to predict things. So I kept up through the literature and so forth, and I used the birth times of patients to get an idea on what level to contact them, because I was an osteopath, therefore there's a link between the spine and the ego, and there were a lot of psychological problems behind the spinal problems. So that it was very often, it was the type of conversation which I had with the patient which was more important than the manipulation. And that's how I used astrology during that time. But it was only, what was it, in 69, Raja wrote me saying that there was a new astrological organization which came out as ESAR. I don't know if you know ESAR. Julian Sturm had set it up, and Raja said, I've suggested you to represent Switzerland. Oh, I said, well, I hadn't thought of going back to astrology at that time because I really hadn't much time for it. But I accepted because he asked me to. And that's how I came back to astrology, when they had their international congress in Canada in 72, I think it was. I was over there. And especially the year after in San Diego, in 73. And there I gave a talk on, well, it wasn't that many, on the transit cycles, as Raja conceived them. Raja was present at the time. And there was quite a blow up after that. Everybody got up and clapped, and I was hoiked off into a corner. They wanted to question me on all sorts of things. Even Roger came and hugged me and said, you've got to publish that. I'll give you a letter to my editor in New York. It's for Random House. You can base a book on that text. But unfortunately, Random House wouldn't accept it, saying it was too technical. So I didn't get down to writing it until a year or so later, after having spent a year going round America giving workshops that had been organized by people here in the region. In 1975, I think that was. And as a result of that, well, I put it all down into the book form. And it came out with Stephen Arroyo as Cycles of Becoming. But that's how I came back, and I even gave up my osteopathic work when I realized that I seemed to have to respond to something new. Strange enough, it was just after a progressed full moon, which made me decide that I'd have to change and be active in another way. And so that's how things are now. My first progressed full moon, as a matter of fact, came in 1939. I went over to Switzerland, which I thought was going to be for a holiday. And then the war broke out, and I was still there. That put an end to one chapter of my life. The moon, progressed moon, was going over the ascendant, and the progressed sun was getting ready to go over the descendant. But I had to wait for the next progressed new moon before I was allowed to work as an osteopath in Switzerland. Which is rather interesting in terms of the symbolism. So I spent my time there learning French and trying to put Rodia's idea into French and so forth. All head work. And it was only when the balsamic moon started that the opportunity came to pass the exams which apparently were necessary to have the right to practice in Switzerland. And with the progressed new moon, I had my certificate and everything, and I started work. And so all that period, I was just working there 9 hours a day in front of a treatment table, no astrology, until the full moon came along. You stopped being active like that, and you had to think a bit more. And that's how it started. And now I'm in the balsamic phase, trying to bring everything to a seed as best I can. I've been following that, and I think that is also one great element, and I don't think everybody really uses astrology that way. They don't apply it to themselves. I find so many astrologers, they don't even know the positions of their planets in their charts when you talk to them. Oh, I haven't got my chart there. You know. That means they're not using consciously their charts to find out in what phase or what house the thing is, to concentrate their attention openly in that type of experience. 1973 was a year of test for that. I went to the United States for that San Diego conference with aspects where every traditional astrologer would have said, you better stay home. Dangerous, you know. Saturn was in the seventh house, square Uranus and Pluto, whatnot, in the ninth house. And I have a T-square in cardinal signs, which was being tickled up by all that. And evidently, it wasn't a very, what should we say, benefic thing, according to the traditional way of looking at it. But I said, no. Well, Rudyard says, Saturn in the seventh house, you've got to be open there to new relationships. You've got to meet people, be prepared to have your ideas of yourself upset by what you meet and who you meet. It's not a matter of having happy or unhappy things, but having experiences which are necessary for your development. So I said, well, that's a fine idea. I've never been to the United States. I'm going to meet a lot of new people, and it'll be a test. So off I went. And it's been really a most extraordinary experience. That's in 1975. It took me a whole year to digest everything that came through the contact with all these nice people in every town. It was something fantastic. I lost 6 pounds in weight, but that's another point. But on other levels, it was the most extraordinary period of all. And there was Saturn going through 7, 8, and 9 through these years. Now, if you really do open yourself consciously to what the progressed moon tells you to do, you start a process, you wake up things, potentialities within you which will remain asleep unless you think about giving them the chance to open up And they're going to open up in the sphere of experience that the progressed house is showing you. So if you decide to try and cultivate situations where that house is going to be activated, well, then your potentials can spill out. Anyway, that's the way I feel that one should try and use it. Later in Europe.
Later, and yet also there's a different matrix in which it's happening. You know, the European mentality being in many ways very different from the American mentality, and therefore results potentially different. Could you say anything about the similarities or the differences of the two situations?
Well, I think that the attitude of what you call the establishment today is about the same everywhere, really. Towards astrology. There's a certain tolerance of it, but every now and again they threaten to forbid it. But they haven't got down to that as yet. But astrologers attack like everybody else in France. They only have the idea that we are people who are making a fortune out of exploiting people. That is their argument, which is not very true. But that's the way they think. There are computer horoscopes, of course. But the great problem in Europe, of course, is you see that the differences of language. In France, unless you speak English, well, they don't know much about what is happening in England. They won't read an English book because they can't read an English book any more than you can read a French book. And that stops a certain circulation of ideas. You have the same problem with Germany. Each country has a sort of special way of looking at astrology, and other countries don't know what they're talking about. Except for America, where everybody comes from Europe and tries to put over their thing in English, you see. But in Europe, I mean, in France, for example, there are very few people who know what the German astrologers, like Ebertine with the midpoints, cosmobiology, they don't know anything about it. Ebertine's been over once or twice to talk, but he doesn't speak very good French. There are some persons interested, but it hasn't really developed anything at all. In Britain, of course, they're following British astrologers. John Addy, the harmonics, you may have heard of the harmonics theory. I think it's an interesting theory, but for the British that's more important than Raja, because Addy was a Britisher. That is very British. But people are taking astrology much more seriously, including the astrologers, which is a very good thing. Yes?
I have a question. I have an opportunity to write an astrology column, which is, I don't know if it's a good opportunity or not. And I would like to ask you what your opinion would be of a way to write an astrology column for the average person, I mean, you know, the person who doesn't know anything about astrology, in such a way that I can incorporate some of the ideas of Rudyard and yet have it be readable enough so that the newspaper wants to continue to publish it.
Well, it's only one column.
No, a continuous column, once a week.
No, but I mean the space is just one column by each time. You haven't
probably 250 words.
Well, that's the problem.
Right, and so do we not do anything at all?
But it's difficult there. I did it in Switzerland. But I insisted, I knew the editor of the paper, it was a weekly paper. I insisted on having the right to write an article to start with, explaining what I was trying to do, the limits within which the thing could be taken as being worth anything, and I insisted on having enough space to say something worthwhile on each sign. And I used the same technique that Rudyard used in American astrology, based on the phases of the moon, interpreting the whole planetary pattern from 12 points of view, according to the aspects that were taking place between each phase. And I did that, came out once a week, and after a few months, the editor rang me up and said, there's a bit of a trouble here. The Catholic Church wants to stop you because you're having too much influence.
I've already been stopped.
Well, that is because with that way of doing it, you get caught in the idea of a cycle. Things are in movement. The person is carried along. They know they're going someplace, and there's something behind them. And that is the way where you can get people. And you can say some very worthwhile things if you present it in that way. It's dynamic. But it's much more difficult to do than the way that most people do it in the papers, even in the astrological papers. But it is a very worthwhile, and we could use that way to produce astrology for the public in a way which would be worthwhile for astrology and for people. It wouldn't be attacked in the same way as being just ridiculous, which you may have trouble with the church, that's possible. I mean, there are other people who carried on. When I finished doing that, and the church doesn't bother about them at all. Acquaintances of mine, they said they'd even seen simple people taking the dictionary to see what I was trying to say. So it shows there is an impact with the way in which it is presented. Anyway, that technique is very, very worthwhile. If you want to popularize astrology, base it on the lunation cycle. Yeah?
Well, I wanted to talk shop about astrology in Europe. I don't know too much about what's going on specifically. I guess you could answer from France. Obviously, it's not accepted, but what is the general opinion in France? If you were to tell someone you were an astrologer, would they slowly move across the room away from you? Or what do astrologers charge? How long do they take? How common are they? I mean, how many are there?
There are a lot of astrologers, but there are all sorts.
And how long do they take?
That's very variable. Yeah. Very variable. Il prend combien de temps, Marie-F? Pour faire les thèmes en France?
About the temps? What do you mean? How much time you keep the person, or how much?
Yeah. How long do they spend? Are they event oriented or person centered?
It's all events. It's all events. It's all events. There is a certain type of psychological based on Freud, thanks to André Barbeau, who is one of the leading astrologers, French astrologers today. He did a very good work, as a matter of fact, to try and bring psychological ideas into France, but he limited himself to Freud. And a lot of people present astrology with that awful Freudian jargon, you know, which doesn't mean a thing to anybody outside Freudians.
French people want to be very rationalist.
How do they interpret it in a Freudian context? I mean, what sort of Freudian jargon do they put?
Well, they've linked up the planets to different aspects of the Freudian way of looking at a human being. You can do it in a Jungian way, you can do it in a Sagioli way, you can do it in all sorts of ways. They limit it to the concept of Freud, and there you are.
everything's repressed.
No, they talk about oral problems and anal problems and things like that, you know. Oedipus complexes and that, and everything's due to that, you see.
Yes, but, you know, depression, well, there's very much the same thing going on here in terms of various, if you like them, various psychological terminologies. If you don't like them, various psychological jargons that are being equated with various planetary symbolism and symbolism of the horoscope. Astrology is extraordinarily flexible that way. If you haven't figured that out, you can do anything you want to with it. And that's one of the great beauties of it. It's one of the great freedoms and the great responsibility of it.
Yeah, good.
Why don't we take a couple more questions and then we should break so we get a minute to kind of collect ourselves before dinner.
Yes.
It's not really a question. It's about in Britain, as far as psychological astrology is mentioned, I found Lisbon is an interesting person in a Jungian way, or strictly psychological.
Well, there's quite a lot of Jungian stuff in England. But Jung is not so well known in France, for example.
Uh-huh.
They haven't really finished translating his works into France yet, into French yet.
Well,
and it hasn't been done in a logical way, you know, the collected works where you have things which follow the timing of when his things came out. It sort of comes out in little bits here and there.
Yes, I studied psychology in French university, and there's Freud and Lacan, and nobody else exists.
No, it's terrible.
And it has to be very rational. Nothing.
It's rational or it's laboratory stuff.
Yes, but you realize also, in America, until 15 years ago, you know, all there was in American psychology was rats.
Well, I was reading Jung before the war. I had to take an underground. It took me over an hour every day both ways, and I was reading Jung on the way back and forth like a novel. It was just lovely stuff. But it was already there in England in 1936, whereas in France it's not there yet, and it's 1983.
And people laugh if you say, I'm studying Jung. They just start saying,
yes, they think, and they don't take Jung seriously. I mean, he's not considered to be scientific, you see, that's the point. Yes.
How much contact do you have with the Italian and German part of Switzerland?
Sergioli?
Yes, the Italian and German part of Switzerland.
Yes.
With the Italian, I haven't had much, except I've been at two congresses which have been held in the Italian part of Switzerland. And then I participated in the same thing that Rudyard did for the Italians there on the signs of the zodiac, which were published.
It was a collection of books, each on one sign of the zodiac.
Yeah.
And a different internationally known astrologer was asked to write the booklet on their own sun sign.
No, it wasn't their own. I was asked to do Libra.
Oh, really? I thought everyone did that.
No, I did Libra, and Rudyard did Aries.
Oh, I thought everyone
And Artex were the first to arrive together, which is rather amusing. We had the complementary signs, and they came together before anybody else. But Italy, there is a movement which seems to be growing.
Yeah. There are four of the dress books going into Italian.
There was that very nice lady, Serena Foglia, who comes over to most of the congresses, who's very active there. In Germany, of course, it's mainly the Hamburg School. There's the Ebertine Midpoints, and there's also Elizabeth, what's her name? She's the defender of Koch houses and things.
So Germany was way over to the greater part of Switzerland than their particular class of people.
Well, they pick up the Germans because they have the same language, you see, the German Swiss, except for the Hubers. There's Bruno and Louise Huber, because they worked with us at Joli, and they've adapted, as far as they could, a lot of his ideas to their type of psychological astrology. But that's quite particular. And they do a lot of work. I mean, they have workshops in Germany and in Switzerland all through the year. They're continually going round. They're very well organized, and they're making a big impact. They even publish their own material now. They've got a little printing shop.
Well,
There's an Italian woman who's Liza Mopogo.
Yes, Liza Mopogo. That's
she's
another good one.
France,
she's also a psychologist.
I'd be interested in you sharing that here from your Sagittarian viewpoint. The purpose of this newborn being, which is Rita.
The purpose of?
Of Rita.
The purpose of Rita. Well, I think we need a central rallying point where everything connected with what Raja represents can be found, can be reproduced and put to the disposition of people who want to carry on with it. I think it's a very essential thing today. Otherwise, it's all spread out. Nobody knows where to go. Books, they stop printing them. And unless there is a center which is continually able to put forward this book exists, this idea exists, and so forth, it can lose its impact. You mustn't forget, you see, because of the attitude of the collective to Raja, his books have come out very recently. There hasn't been much time yet for it to really spread. It's a beginning. We've got to carry it on somehow, I think. I think it's quite right. It's not a matter of an organization, and that I'm quite agreement too. The humanistic, the committee there went wrong on that line. But we should have some sort of rallying point where all the material is there. And we can push on from there.
So we can plan for a European Rita, possibly in another...
Possibly also. It could be international like the other thing was, provided the people who do it properly and don't try and use it in order to push themselves. You see, that's the great trouble in practically everything. I mean, I've been teaching osteopathy to physiotherapists, and often they use the title just to show that they're superior to other physiotherapists. It's not because they want to work better or have a new technique at their disposition. There's always the wrong way of using what is at your disposal.
Sir, what do you consider, from your perspective, some of the major obstacles to the development of a astrological perspective as you perceive it? What are the forthcoming major obstacles that we've got to deal with?
Well, I think it's just the mentality. The mentality of our culture, which cannot accept yet completely what astrology is trying to put forward. Actually, what Raja says and what the leaders in scientific research say is exactly the same thing. You have the leading scientists, even in the French magazines, they're talking the same language. You could say, well, that's astrology too. They would understand. But the science which is taught in the universities is not that science. It's not accepted by them yet. It's only the elite. So we have to wait a little while. They're not open enough. Their whole world will tumble down if they accept astrology. And they're not strong enough to stand that tumbling down, you see. It's the question of change, you see. And it's not only peculiar to scientists, everybody can get a bit scary when they have to change. It's quite obvious. If everything you built your life on suddenly is put forward as being worth nothing, well, it is a bit of a shock.
Okay. Well, the kitchen will be awaiting us all.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you.
This is the end of my work with Rudyard's Approach to Astrology by Alexander Gruperti from the 1983 Rita Conference. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Rita and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.